We're not going to look at all of it. It's too much. It's 1 Samuel chapter 2. It starts at verse 11. Now, we're not going to read all of this. We're just going to parachute down into some of it. 1 Samuel chapter 2, starting in verse 11, and the landscape that we're going to cover goes all the way through chapter 3. So I'm only going to read a selected part of it, and we're going to camp out tonight at chapter 2, verse 35. We'll look at some other verses, but that will be our home base. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 35. That's the verse. I'm going to read that verse, and then I'm going to read the first 10 verses of chapter 3, and then we'll get started. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. But I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who will do according to what is in my heart and in my soul. And I will build him an enduring house, and he will walk before my anointed always. Some translations say forever. Now skip down to chapter 3. Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord before Eli. A word from the Lord was rare in those days. Visions were infrequent. In other words, there was a spiritual famine going on in Israel at this time. Verse 2, it happened at the time as Eli was lying down in his place. Now his eyesight had begun to grow dim and he could not see well. By the way, that is a metaphor for Eli spiritually as well. He could not see spiritually very well. Verse 3, and the lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was. And that is then when the Lord called Samuel, and Samuel said, "Here I am." And then he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I did not call. Lie down again." So he went and lay down. The Lord called yet again, "Samuel." So Samuel rose and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he answered, "I did not call, my son. Lie down again." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, nor had the word of the Lord yet been revealed to him. So the Lord called Samuel again for the third time. And he arose and he went to Eli and he said, "Here I am, for you called me." And then Eli discerned that the Lord was calling the boy. And Eli said to Samuel, "Go lie down, and it shall be, if he calls you, that you shall say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. And then the Lord came and stood, which, by the way, that just gives me goosebumps. I mean, can you imagine? The Lord came and stood and called, as at other times, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant is listening." Okay. Let's take 60 seconds, and we're just going to be quiet. I ask in these 60 seconds, you can just blank your mind if you need to, or just be real still and quiet. My request is that you attempt to be present to his presence. Be open to anything that he might want to communicate, a word, a phrase, a sentence, or an idea, maybe a picture. And after 60 seconds, we'll pray and then we'll get started with our lesson. Let's be quiet. Lord, give us grace to be open to whatever you want to say or do in these moments as we're together. And I would ask that you take the words that I have to say, Lord, only I can only speak to their ears. But Lord, I would ask that you would take these moments and speak to our hearts. And I'm asking this for the sake of Jesus. Amen. Okay, when you hear the word priest, what comes to your mind? Leader. Say again.
A leader.
Thank you. Yeah.
Teacher.
Okay.
Set apart.
Very good. Yeah. Say that again. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Very good. Any other? What pictures come to mind? You hear the word priest. What do you see in your mind? Yeah. Balthazar? Okay. Elizabeth? Okay, now let's do another word. What comes to your mind when you hear the word faithful?
Servant.
Say again?
Servant.
Very good.
Committed.
Thank you. Yeah, Andre?
Loyal.
What comes to your mind when you hear the word faithful?
Perseverance.
Say again?
Perseverance.
Thank you. Okay, I want you to notice chapter 2, 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 35. We have, "But I will raise up for myself a faithful priest." What we will try to see tonight is a contrast between what is a faithful priest and what is a worthless priest. What is trustworthy and what is wicked. What is loyal and what is lawless. What is responsive to the Lord and rebellious to the Lord. Verse 12, chapter 2, starts out this way. "Now the sons of Eli were worthless men. They did not know the Lord." That's not even funny. I don't know why I'm laughing. But can you imagine a preacher who doesn't know Jesus? Can you imagine a spiritual leader who's leading a flock or a congregation and they have no idea who God is? Do you want to say something, Andre? You're going to have to say it louder. Yeah, oh yes, that's true. I'm talking about Christianity. I've actually known two men who went into the ministry, were pastoring churches, and did not know Jesus, not at all. And it was through the love of their congregation that they came to know Jesus. Both of them. So it blows my mind. But this is the condition of the priesthood in Israel. The sons of Eli. This is talking about Hophni. We'll see their names here in a little bit. Hophni and Phinehas. These are the two sons of Eli. They are the priest and probably the priests that are running the show at Shiloh. Shiloh is the place where the tabernacle is now set up. It's not at Jerusalem yet. It's at Shiloh. Now Hophni, the name Hophni means fighter with the fist. Phineas means mouth of brass. Mouth of brass.
I heard brass.
Basically, what we're being told is that, and the story will bear this out, basically, Hophni and Phineas are thugs. They go to the sacrifices and they take the choicest pieces of meat, which, by the way, when a sacrifice is made, the choicest pieces of meat are meant for God. But they come and take them for themselves. They force the women who are serving at the temple to have sex with them, basically turning the temple into a brothel. They're basically thugs. Verse 22 summarizes some of what they are like. Let's see if I can get there. Now, Eli was very old. Let's see if I've got this right. And he heard all that his sons were doing to all Israel. Now that phrase is very important. It wasn't that they were caring for Israel. They were doing to Israel. Verse 17 says this to us. It says, "And thus the sin of the young men," this is Hophni and Phinehas, "was very great before the Lord." Now this is a play on words in this verse 17. The word "great" here also means grow. It means something that is growing. And by the way, what's very interesting is this word is used three times. This word "great" or "growing" is used three times to describe Samuel. In verse 21, he is described as Samuel grew. Verse 20, "The Lord visited Hannah, and she conceived and gave birth to three sons and two daughters. And the boy Samuel grew before the Lord." And then in verse 26, "Now the boy Samuel was growing in stature and in favor, both with the Lord and with men." And then towards the end of chapter 3, verse 19, "Thus Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and let none of his words fall to the ground." Samuel was growing before the Lord. He was becoming great to God. But at the same time, the sin of Hophni and Phinehas was very great to God. So you get the contrast. Here is someone being faithful. Here is someone who is being a fraud. Here is someone who is being loyal. Here is someone that's being lawless. Now, verse 11 in chapter 2 begins the description of Samuel. He served the Lord in Eli's presence. That's what that means. When he says he served the Lord before Eli, he's serving the Lord in Eli's presence. That's also echoed in verse 18. But in verse 18, this time he is wearing an ephod. Now, an ephod was a linen apron, and this is a piece of priestly clothing. So what's being told to us is that Samuel is beginning to serve as a priest. Verse 26, he grows in stature and in favor with the Lord and with people. This is a way of saying that Samuel was continuing to rise as someone spiritually great. And he was growing better and better in the eyes of the Lord and all of the people. While at the same time, Hophni and Phinehas are becoming more and more despicable and sinful. In other words, what we're being told in this part of chapter 2, starting in verse 11, all the way to where we're going to camp out at verse 35, is that Samuel is replacing the priesthood at Shiloh. He's replacing Eli and his sons. Now, starting in verse 27 of chapter 2, There is a man of God. We're never told who this is. There is a man of God that comes to Eli, and he speaks prophetic judgment on Eli's ministry, on Eli's priesthood and his sons. Now, you need to understand, this is huge. This prophetic judgment is huge. Eli is not just a senior pastor of some large church. He is the spiritual leader. In other words, I could say it this way. He is the spiritual ruler of all of Israel, of the whole land. He was put in this position by God. But because of the sins of his sons and Eli's passivity about those sins, or maybe he was too fearful of his sons because they were such thugs, he does not take decisive action to stop them. And so God is now coming in this man of God speaking judgment and removing his whole family from the priesthood. Eli and his sons will be replaced by Samuel. And so now we get to verse 35, and we find this sentence that is said, "But I will raise up for myself a faithful priest." Now, I want you to know this verse has many layers to it. And we could probably spend all of our time just looking at the different layers. I'm going to try to pull some of them out for us to look at. And the question is where I want to get to is, what in the world does this have to do with me? And hopefully we'll get there. No matter what, at 8 o'clock, I got to stop so that you can have conversation in your small groups. Let's just hope that I get far enough for you to have something to converse about, okay? Okay. I am sometimes like the old pastor who would put his finger in his Bible and he would start to preach. And someone asked him one day, "Why do you put your finger in the Bible when you start to preach?" And he said, "Well, I put it there just in case I get to the text." Okay, well, that was supposed to be more funny than it was, but is it? Okay, all right. Thank you so much. All right, so we're going to camp out at this verse for a little bit. This verse is, first of all, talking about Samuel. Samuel is the faithful priest who is going to be replacing Eli and his sons. Now, Samuel will not stay a priest. I mean, he'll always be a priest, but Samuel will become a prophet. Okay? This verse is also probably looking through years and years to come and seeing the priesthood of Zadok, who will minister before David. And the reason I say that is because this verse says this faithful priest will walk before God's anointed. Most likely that's a reference to David. And so it's looking down the century, down the years to Zadok, who will come and be a replacement to the priesthood. But there's also another layer to this verse that you need to be able to see. And it comes with the last word, always, or some translations, forever. You know, I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who will do according to what is in my heart and my soul, and I will build him an enduring house, and he will walk before my anointed. And then that last word, always or forever. That cannot be Zadok. That's a reference to a third person, another person in view of this verse. It can't be Zadok because he didn't walk on the earth for forever. Okay, it's a reference to Jesus. Jesus is our faithful priest. I want you to listen to these verses. This is Hebrews chapter 7. Verses 23-25. This is a description of Jesus now. Hebrews 7, verses 23-25. The former priest, on the one hand, existed in greater numbers because they were prevented by death from continuing. But Jesus, on the other hand, because he continues forever, there's that word, because he continues forever, holds his priesthood permanently. Therefore, he is able also to save forever those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for us. So this is probably a reference to Jesus. But there's one more layer that I need you to see. There's one more priesthood in view from this verse, and that priesthood is yours and mine. As followers of Jesus, who is our high priest and whom we are called to be like, as followers of Jesus, we are called to be priests as well. And so go with me to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 4. Verses 4 and 5, and then we'll skip to verse 9. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 4 says this, "And coming to him," this is Jesus, "as to a living stone, which has been rejected by men, but is choice and precious in the sight of God, you also, as living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ." Now skip down to verse 9. "And you are," doesn't say you will be, doesn't say you might be, doesn't say you can be, "you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." This is you and me. Verse 35 in chapter 2, 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 35. Is including you and me. We are priests. So what does it mean for you and me to be a faithful priest? Well, I'm going to talk about, out of this verse, I'm going to talk about an inward part of this idea of being faithful, an outward part of this idea of being a faithful priest, and an upward part about this, about us being a faithful priest. Inward, outward, and upward. And let's start with asking, what does a priest do? Let's start with that. And this is the upward part. This is the upward part of being a priest. If you notice in chapter 2, verse 8, this is 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 18. It says Samuel was serving, some translations say ministering, before the Lord. He was wearing an ephod as a priest. Okay, verse 11 of chapter 2 and also chapter 3 verse 1 also says this, serving before the Lord or ministering to the Lord. And beloved, what this is telling us about a priest is that this is language that is saying a priest is one who lives for an audience of one. Our whole life is wrapped around an audience of just one. Now, I'll be honest with you, and I think that if you and I knew each other well enough, you could be honest with me, and we would probably have similar claims about this. That's something that's difficult to do. In my life, I have lots of audiences. Every day I have different odds. Sometimes it's an audience of just one person in a counseling room who is pouring out a painful story. And I so much want to care for them. I so much want to come up with the answer that will be just right. I so much want to give them the wisdom that will help them find the healing that they're looking for. That's the wrong audience. When I'm teaching or preaching, 2 weeks ago I preached at Underground. I have a phobia. I of public speaking. I really do. I'm not trying to joke. I'm terrified of it. And so a lot of times when I'm placed before a group of people, I'm living for that audience that's sitting in front of me. I'm working for that audience that is listening to me. I'm not living for an audience of one. So I have growing up to do. But I don't have any money to bet, but I would bet that there's some others in here that could be your testimony as well. Is that there's a real struggle trying to learn how to live for just Him. But He's the only audience that counts. But that is what a priest is. A priest is one who lives for an audience of one. A priest is someone whose focus in life and their leading motivation in everything they do is to minister and to serve God. Period. So, beloved, join me. If you have growth to do in that, then just come with me. Come, because I have lots of growth to do in that. But I'm so honored. I'm so deeply honored to be a priest for the living God. Now, why does God need to be ministered to? I mean, why does God lack? What does He lack that He needs someone to serve Him in? Well, I mean, and you know the answer to that. These are questions I just want to ask to kind of clear the table, but you know the answer. God does not need anything, but beloved, He does want something. In Ezekiel chapter 44, and I'm not going to unpack that chapter, but I'm giving it to you so you can go look it up yourself. In Ezekiel chapter 44, ministering to the Lord is described as drawing near to Him. What does God want more than anything in the universe? Children. God wants relational nearness. He wants relational closeness. Giving attention to Him in worship and praise, or singing to Him, in the shower or with other people or whatever. Praying with Him, talking to Him, pouring out your heart like we saw Hannah do, where just being your real self as you describe what your life experience is at the moment. Being present to His presence, like I suggested that we do in our 60 seconds. Seeking His heart and mind on matters. Lord, what is it that you think about this? What is your heart about this? Listening for anything He might want to communicate. In other words, practicing some silence and solitude. And I know for some of our extroverts in the room that those are just cuss words. I understand that. But still, in a little bit, if I get to the end of this teaching, you'll hear me talk a little bit about silence and solitude and their necessity to be a priest. Ezekiel 44, yeah. Man, you know, I'm hard of hearing. Did y'all know that? I really am hard of hearing. What'd you say? And, yeah, huh? And With mask on, it's even harder. So, no. So when you say something, you ask something or say something to me, play like I'm in that room back there, and you're trying to get my attention.
Okay.
I'm like, way to go, Michael. I'm so proud of you. All right. I just described to you what ministering to the Lord is. Giving attention to Him, worship, praise, so on and so forth. Do I need to go through that list again? You got that list? It's not a complete list, by the way. But it is a list of what it means to minister to Him. So now here comes the question. Are you doing this? Are you making room for this? I know you're busy. I can't imagine how busy you are. Really, to be honest, I know you're busy. And I know you got lots of plates that are spinning and you're trying to keep them up so that they don't come crashing to the ground. I get it. But are you making room to minister to the Lord? Because that is what a faithful priest does. You are a priest. The question will be, what kind? I know about busyness a little bit. In the next 5 months, I think it is, I have 3 of my children getting married. So I have a wedding in 2 weeks. I have a wedding in November, and I have another wedding January 2nd. My oldest daughter just got out of the hospital. She was in and out of the hospital for 3 months due to COVID. We almost lost her. What saved her life was a 9-hour surgery trying to rescue her right lung. So I have 2 jobs. I work for Wesley, and I play like I work at St. Luke's. Don't tell them I said that. I've got things going on, so I understand. I get to the point sometimes where I've got my head down and I'm just doing the next thing, and then getting that out of the way, and doing the next thing, and getting that out of the way, doing the next thing, and I'm just grinding it out. And the end of the day comes, maybe the end of the week comes, and I've never given God a thought. And by the way, I'm doing ministry all week long. How does that work? So I'm just saying, are you ministering to Him? Are you carving out time and space to minister to Him? This is the upward part of being a priest. Are you being the priest that you've been called to be? Now, let me stop here. Let me just pause. Let's see what time it is. Oh my gosh, I got to almost stop. I want to know, what has this done to you so far? I just need some feedback. What has this done to you so far? Is it convicting? A little bit? What?
A little bit.
Okay. Okay, I wouldn't expect, huh?
That awkward, uncomfortable convicting, like, you're kind of like, turning away from it.
Okay, so like, it isn't so convicting you don't want to come back though, right? I mean, because I want y'all to come back, you know, it's like, yeah. I almost want to say I'm sorry. I'm just really trying to tell you what it is. I don't really mean to, if I'm being mean to you, then I right now ask for forgiveness, that you start the process of forgiving me. Yes, Shannon.
Oh, I'm big on like practical, actionable advice. So things like this is really good. Like, you know, you know, it's great to hear, like, God is love. But sometimes you just need to be told, this is how you do it, this is how you proceed with it. So I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That It's very valuable that you work to make this practical. I'm trying to offer some tangible ways that we can do this by this list of stuff that I just said. But the goal is that are you giving time each week? Are you giving time to draw near to Him? That's what it means to minister, because more than anything else, He wants children, and more than anything else, He wants to be close to His children. So, you're wanting to say something, Michael.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, you're right. I was going to say it's nice to like hear, you know, because I also feel like the grind is taking my attention a little bit off of, like, I just, you know, put my head down, go through the next thing, like you said. So, like, hearing that from you and stuff, and like, you know, there's grace. But I should stop just like running through walls with my head down, you know, and do the upward priest call.
Yeah. Yeah, very good. Yeah. So you know what's going to come then. We're going to need to talk about the outward part of being a priest, and we're going to have to talk about the inward part. But we won't get to that tonight. We'll have to come back to that next Tuesday. Okay? So here's what we're going to do. I want to make sure that you have time to talk about this. And let me ask you, in your small groups, that you push this a little bit about how to make this practical. Make this real. Make this something that is livable. In other words, a lot of times I'll ask for you to talk about in your small groups, what was your whoopsie? What word or new understanding or phrase or sentence or an idea? Whoopsie. WUPSI. Whoopsie. What whoopsie came out of this teaching for you? But that isn't the most important question. What I'm asking is what stood out to you? What spoke to you? What had some power with you? What meant something to you? Okay, that's what I'm asking. But then the more important question is, what are you going to do with it? Because it does you no good to just get more information. That does no one good. But putting it into life, you know, making it flesh and blood, making it real, that's where God's Word begins to change us. And so that's what, you know, push that in your small groups tonight, okay? All right, so Elizabeth will be over here. And Brad, will you be with Elizabeth? Okay.